T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hello and welcome to Trust the Tape, episode 11.27.2018. Jeff Cavanaugh at JC1053 on your Twitter machine, alongside my co-host, the great Dane Brugler at DP Brugler from The Athletic. And we're here to trust the tape and talk college football with you on a Tuesday or whatever day you listen to this podcast. And we have much to dive into today, Dane.
We do.
Including my top story, which is there such a thing as an unforgivable loss in college football? It's my top story of the day.
Unforgivable loss.
I've been thinking about this.
Explain.
Do we want the four best teams in the playoff, or do we want the four teams that deserve to be in the playoff? I don't think they're the same thing.
They rarely are.
So which one are we looking for? They tell us best, right?
They do tell us best, but both things are very debatable. I don't think there's a clear-cut four best teams. I don't think there's a clear-cut four most deserving teams. Now, if we're just going based off a record, that's one thing, but when we talk about deserving, it's tough because all these conferences are so different, the schedules are so different, and so I think it's debatable. So if you told me that the best four would be what we assume is going to be the top four tonight, which is going to be Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I necessarily disagree with you. But Oklahoma has a strong case. Ohio State has a strong case. And they're going to have a chance to show that this weekend.
And Georgia's going to take a loss, so they're not going to make it.
No.
Now, if Georgia does beat Alabama, they're both going.
No, yeah.
They'll both go. And I'm fine with that.
Yes.
My question is, once Georgia loses, and they're going to be out, and it goes down to Oklahoma and Ohio State, after watching Ohio State against Michigan, I think Ohio State, if you said, hey, which team is better, I think I would pick Ohio State. But if you said which team is more deserving, I'd say you can't lose by 100 points to Purdue. Can't do it. That's an atrocious loss.
It's a bad loss.
If OU ends the season with their only loss being a three-point loss to Texas and Ohio State's is a blowout against Purdue, it's not close. OU deserves to go. But OU's got the worst defense I've ever seen play sports. I don't care what sport. Football, basketball, baseball. Texas Rangers were a bad defensive team. They're not as bad as OU. OU is the worst defense I think I've ever seen, and I watch them every week. The offense is incredible.
It is.
Quarterback's incredible.
Yeah.
There's talent everywhere. There's no defense. So can I call them one of the four best? I don't know.
I guess
they'll be the fourth most deserving.
My only argument to that is Ohio State, Oklahoma ranks 100 in the hundreds in total defense. Ohio State, they're in the 70s in defense.
Not good.
And so
there's a difference between not good and the worst.
But one plays in a conference with, what if that Ohio State defense played in the Big 12?
That's true. I got a Big 10 problem for you. And here's my Big 10 problem. We hear about how Big 12 can't play defense.
All right.
How about the Big 10 can't play offense?
Well, yeah, and that's always been the case.
I go into that game, Ohio State-Michigan, it's this Michigan defense is impenetrable.
Yeah.
They allow 100 passing yards per game because nobody in your conference can throw. Nobody.
Yeah, look, Michigan's got, there's a lot of future pros on that defense. They are a good defense, but they weren't at 100%, and that showed. And I think I don't think it's more about the Michigan defense. I think it's more just about the Ohio State offense. And just like Oklahoma, how much fun it could be to watch when they're clicking. It's a big difference. And to your point about losing to Purdue, it's valid. Absolutely. No question about it.
Getting smoked by Purdue.
On the road.
Rolled up and smoked.
A Purdue team that needed to win last Saturday to become bowl eligible. So, no argument there. But is Ohio State the team that we saw against Michigan? Is that what we're going to get? And that's the big question. And if we see that same Ohio State team against Northwestern on Saturday night, now Northwestern is not a very good team. But if they look like they did against Michigan against Northwestern, then that's a positive step for Ohio State. Where if Oklahoma, if they kind of stub their toe, and you could also argue that Ohio State has the better win than Oklahoma. Beating Michigan is probably a better win than anything Oklahoma has done. You know, no disrespect to West Virginia or Texas, that win over Michigan is going to be huge for Ohio State. So, and look, as we break it down, that Ohio State-Michigan game, not only did they never trail in that game, but I thought what really impressed me was it didn't have to be a perfect scenario for Ohio State to win that game. Like, Ohio State, they had plenty of mistakes. That fumbled kickoff return right before halftime where they allowed Michigan to basically get right back into that game, almost tie it right before halftime, that was a huge mistake that could have gone, shifted the momentum of the game in a big way. The Tate Martell package at the goal line, that didn't work out. So there were plenty of opportunities where, you know, Ohio State just left production on the field or made mistakes that kept Michigan around, and they still blew Wolverines out. And so,
why are we putting Tate Martell in the football game?
He's a really talented guy.
That's cool. It's on the 5-yard line, and I've got one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I'm going to let him play. What are we doing?
I get it. It's just
what are we doing?
I get it. The Tate Martell package has worked before, and so that's just kind of how they're programmed. And trust me, there's a lot about the Ohio State offense that drives me nuts.
The Taysom Hill thing and the Tate Martell thing, although the Taysom Hill one keeps working.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'll go ahead and play with my starting quarterback. That's the quarterback that I'll leave in. So hey, Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
I want to keep going on this game because of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Answer this both ways.
Okay.
If Justin Herbert does not come into this draft, right, just watching college football this year, mm-hmm, I will take Dwayne Haskins' talent and tools over Jarrett Stidham, over Drew Locke, over take your pick.
Yep.
Dwayne Haskins, if he entered the draft and Justin Herbert didn't, he'd be the first guy I'd pick at quarterback.
I think a lot of teams agree with you.
Now include Herbert.
Yeah.
And what's the order?
I still think Herbert, Haskins in that order. I like Herbert's ceiling more than I like Haskins. I still have some questions with Haskins in terms of his ability to navigate the rush. He's gotten better throughout the season. The more reps, the more experience he has gotten better, no question. I still have some questions there. But I like both these guys a lot. I don't think I like them as much as some of the quarterbacks we had last year. But I do think that Herbert's going back, and Haskins, I think, is coming out. And so I do think that Haskins is the favorite. If that happens, Haskins will be the new favorite to go to be the first quarterback drafted. And if we're going to have a top 10 quarterback this year,
welcome to the Giants.
Haskins is the best chance to do it. And well, it'd be interesting because
the Jaguars are,
there's going to be quarterback desperation out there. And so,
oh, he'll go in the top 5.
Maybe, yeah.
Somebody will, if they already have the pick, they'll pull the trigger, and if they don't, they'll go get them.
Yeah, well,
somebody will go get them.
You look at there are plenty of teams that have quarterback questions from, you mentioned a couple, the Giants, the Jags. I mean, the Broncos are up there. You know, it's really going to be interesting to see, and it's going to be a complete opposite from last year, where last year we had 4 quarterbacks in the top 10. First time that's happened since like 1949 or something. This year, this upcoming draft, it's really dependent on the underclassmen to maybe have a top 10 quarterback. And with Herbert, you know, we don't know. He got hurt on Saturday against Oregon State. Does that help his chances of coming out? Or maybe it helps his chances of going back? We don't know. These decisions are so personal. It's tough to really know. But it's a valid question with Haskins and Herbert, because you had 2 really talented guys who are still very young in their development. But the upside and where they can be, you know, 3 years from now, that gets you excited.
Okay, the next game from over the weekend that I would like to talk about is not going to have any bearing on the playoff. It was just awesome. Texas A&M LSU.
That was crazy.
So I watched every snap of that game.
Yeah, so did I.
And I almost wanted A&M to lose because I was all geared up with a Jimbo rant. If you are down by 1 point at the end of regulation and they cheat to try to block your extra point, and you can run one play from the 1-yard line, I want to run that play.
Yeah.
I want to go win the football game and save my kids 7 overtimes. I was a little surprised he didn't run it, and that they kicked the extra point and they played all those dang overtimes, which looked terrible for all the children involved.
Who would have thought seven overtimes? That's just
yeah, you weren't playing it for seven, but no. From the 1 yard line, go get your yard.
Yeah,
go get your yard and win the game. You're the underdog here.
Yeah, I mean the game was at home.
I
mean,
so maybe I don't even know, were they the underdog?
It was in
College
Station.
Ranking wise, they were 15 spots behind, but at home. It might have been close to a pick.
Right. Probably. But
go get your yard, Jimbo.
It's just, it's so funny the amount of ways LSU almost should have won. Not funny, I guess. Sorry for the LSU fans. But, I mean, I tweeted this out, but there was probably someone, either an LSU fan or an A&M fan, who went to bed after that Grant Delpit interception. Like, the game was over.
Oh, yeah.
Delpit had the interception. He goes to bed. He or she goes to bed, wakes up the next morning, and sees seven overtimes and A&M wins. Like, talk about, I would pay money to see their expression. Just mind blown about what just happened. Like, what is going on right now? It was just crazy to see things play out. A lot of questionable calls that I thought that Jay Sternberger incomplete pass that I thought it was a fumble in overtime. It was the first overtime. He caught the pass at like the inside the 5 yard line. Yeah. I think it was Grant Delpit who came in, forced the fumble. But they called it an incomplete pass. Looked like he had possession and started to make a move. I would have called it a fumble. But, you know, there were a lot of moments like that for, if you're an LSU fan, that's just, I think there's part of you that feels like, okay.
Sorry, Broadus. Sorry, Hellman.
Yeah, exactly. Who were in attendance. We have to feel good about being part of an historic game, but, man, that should have been a win.
My favorite player in that game, having not studied anyone yet, but just watching a couple A&M games live, holy cow, when they need something to happen, Kendrick Rogers shows up. That big old wide receiver from A&M, I don't know how many of the touchdowns and two-point conversions he caught in overtime, but it seemed like about 5 or 10 of them. They needed somebody to make a play, it was big old Kendrick Rogers. Here you go.
The Clemson game and then this game, big time. He's just got ridiculous catch radius. All those, talking about length, that's why length matters. I mean, I don't care what kind of corner you are, you're not going to be able to... You can't defend that. You can't cover that when a receiver has that type of catch radius where they can go up and pick the ball out of the clouds like that. That pass interference against Greedy, what was that, on the two-point conversion?
Greedy shouldn't have cheated.
It was ridiculous.
He shouldn't have cheated.
Just ridiculous.
Such a cheater.
The refs wanted to go home. I'm convinced of that. They were tired.
I would want to go home. It was a five-hour game.
It was.
It's a long game.
I enjoyed it. It was fun for my couch.
I enjoyed it, too. I was ready for it to end.
Yeah.
I was ready to have a winner.
The only problem with that is by the time it ends, it's like midnight, and I mean, I'm getting excited about this game, so I got adrenaline, so I got to wait till that wears off before you go to sleep.
I was at the bar, so I had no problem going to sleep when I got home.
You were good.
Yeah, it worked out well. Good. Imagine how long you've been... consuming at that point. Shout out to Miller Lite.
A couple other, Notre Dame, USC. USC stuck around for a little bit, but Notre Dame pulled away at the end. So basically,
I wish Notre Dame would have lost, and we could have just, we'll get Ohio State and Oklahoma in. Just go ahead and get Notre Dame out.
Unfortunately, that's not what happened.
Notre Dame can't win a national title, right?
I wouldn't say that.
You think they could win it?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I
give you great odds.
I don't think anybody's beating Alabama.
Right.
I mean, that's just how it is. But
I think Oklahoma on a great day could beat anybody. I think Ohio State on a great day could beat anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think Notre Dame can have a day that beats Alabama.
I guess, you know, that's fair. And I think we have two locks for the playoff. Alabama, Notre Dame. I think if somehow Pitt upsets Clemson, they're out. But Pitt's not very good. So, yes, I mean, Clemson is a virtual lock.
Pitt just got spanked by Miami.
Yeah, they got shut out.
Sir, they scored 3 points, I'll have you know.
Okay, they got touchdown shutout.
It was 24-3.
So they got touchdown shutout.
Show a little respect.
So I think we have two locks. No matter what happens, Alabama and Notre Dame, they're getting in. Now, Clemson, they're a virtual lock. It's very unlikely we see an upset there. So that's our three teams. Back to, okay, who's that fourth team? Is it Oklahoma? Is it Ohio State? I think in the playoff rankings tonight, we're going to see...
It'll be Oklahoma tonight.
Yeah, Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma will be fifth.
Which is going to make it really tough for them to ever flip that. Because Oklahoma, if they both win, is going to have a better win again after being ranked ahead of them.
Right.
But I don't know. Can Ohio State... Didn't they do this in 14? They went and beat Wisconsin by a million, and they jumped TCU?
Well, I don't... They didn't have a Big 12 championship game
TCU
that year.
Yeah, TCU didn't have a game.
So it was that 13th data point, that 13th game of evidence. And it might come down to style points. Now, say the OU-Texas game goes like it did in the first time, except OU squeaks it out at the end. How is the committee going to view that compared to...
That's their entire year.
A 50...
their whole year.
A 50 to nothing win against Northwestern for Ohio State. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because performance and style points really going to come into play here.
Don't get smoked by Purdue. Maybe I'll let you in.
Well, it was the same thing with Ohio State last year when they got beat by Iowa pretty bad. That's what kept them out at the end, and this year it's going to be Purdue. And listen, if I'm an Ohio State fan, as much as I'd love to make the playoff, because, you know, I think that I have on any given day, I have the talent to at least hang with Alabama, Clemson, anybody. The consolation prize is I won the Big Ten. I'm going to the Rose Bowl and I have a chance to beat Washington for a Rose Bowl title. I mean, that's not a bad consolation prize. So I think Ohio State's sitting in a pretty good spot.
Okay. Anything else from the weekend we need to do?
I don't think so. I did one more thing on the Ohio State.
My guy Will Greer was balling, by the way, outside of the fact that he fumbled a couple times.
Yeah.
A couple fumbles we lost the game because of, but other than that, my guy was balling.
Watching that game, can we call that football? I mean, is that football?
Heck yeah, that's football.
I mean, it's just not like anything we've seen. I mean, there's no defense.
You didn't watch the Rams play the Chiefs?
That's a little different.
There's some defense. OU forced two turnovers. What a game.
It's funny watching that game because it's just like you're waiting for a turnover. Because whoever makes the turnover, they're probably going to lose. And, you know, West Virginia was able to. It's just amazing to me how can a secondary pass defense be that bad? Like, how do you let the guy get deeper than you? I don't understand. It's really hard to comprehend.
Yeah, I don't understand either.
I mean, Gary Jennings, a few times, just being able to, you know, run down the seam and quarters, they just look like they're stuck in mud and can't do anything about it. It's really perplexing to watch. But I do think it's funny that Ohio State needs help from Tom Herman on Saturday to get that little boost into the playoff.
That would be nice for him. Okay, so other than that, I do have the questions. I have the questions of the day if you want some, Dane.
Sure. What we got?
Let me see here. Oh, we haven't mentioned the Alabama versus Georgia game. Is that just foregone conclusion?
I don't think.
Problem for Georgia is that Jake Fromm's going to have to go win the game.
Probably.
Because they kind of rely on their two backs, and we're going to run it down your throat, and we're going to beat you at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
And that always works really, really well until you play the one team in the country that does all that better than you.
Right.
And now we got a problem.
Right. Well,
and they're in your conference. You built this thing to do what they do, but they do it better.
Right.
And now they have a better quarterback.
And, I mean, we go back to the national title game last year. I mean, it went to overtime, and the game was closed. Now, of course, Tua only played the second half. But if the Georgia defense shows up and keeps the Alabama offense to, you know, somewhere in the 20s, then, yeah, Georgia can score on Alabama to at least keep it close. So I don't think this is going to be a blowout. At the same time, I don't think that Alabama's going to lose either.
All right, from Nathan on the Twitter. Who's had the most disappointing senior year compared to what you thought of them going into the season? Is that Drew Locke, or did he pull it out with his one good game?
Drew Locke's played really well the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked rough against Alabama. And
did him.
Yeah, although he's not a senior, so I guess.
Okay.
But he would definitely, Stidham definitely qualifies in terms of the most disappointing. I don't know if he's regressed, but he hasn't taken a step forward at all. And a big part of that's the offense and everything around him. But, you know, obviously he deserves some of the blame too. I think the obvious candidate here, if we're talking about the most disappointing senior, probably Bryce Love from Stanford. I mean, if you come back after what you did last year, Heisman finalist, if you came out in the draft, you're probably going to be a top 60 pick. You come back for your senior year and it's disappointment, it's injury. You know, he's really struggled to, you know, make much of an impact. And I don't know. I think he's really hurt himself in terms of his draft standing. Last year, I thought he would have been a top 60 pick. This year, he might not be a top 100 pick, largely because of what happened this year. So I think Bryce Love qualifies for that. Who else? Senior. I mean, I think your Jarrett Stidham call makes sense, even though he isn't a senior, because he went from a guy we thought could be a first-round pick to now, it's going to come down to the Senior Bowl. It's going to come down to his pre-draft process to determine if he's going to be a top 100 guy. Is he going to fall a little bit? So I think that qualifies.
Kyler Murray, where do we draft him?
if he is, it sounds like yesterday he came out and said,
he says, I changed my mind, guys. That football's fun.
Yesterday he said baseball is still the plan.
I know.
So would a team
but
still.
But he just tweeted just the second day and he said, just kidding. I love football and I'm going in the draft.
If he was 100% committed to football, then he's going somewhere top 100. You know, not every team's going to be in on him. It's probably going to be, you know, a handful, 10 teams that might even consider him. So, you know, the landing spots are going to be fewer, but somewhere in the top 100, a team's going to take a chance on him. Now, I think a question is, will a team still draft him in the seventh round despite him saying that baseball is still the plan?
I would immediately. I don't remember how the rules work on that.
Well,
but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it's a tough call because if you sign him or if you draft him but then don't sign him, then
could somebody else draft him the next year?
I say he goes back in the draft the next year. Because remember Lyle Collins? That was the big thing with him was
he said he wouldn't sign.
He said he wouldn't sign and he would just enter the draft the next year. So, and technically you could sign him while he's still playing baseball. I mean, there's nothing against him having two professional contracts.
Just pay him to not be there?
I mean, as a seventh round pick.
If you want to show up in year four,
is it worth the investment to give him $400,000 a year?
Uh-huh.
With the off chance that over the next 4 years, that at some point he might give up baseball?
Heck yeah.
Maybe. And I think you have to be a very secure GM. You know, you have to be pretty set in your position. To not only use a draft pick that way, but think that far out where you're going to take that risk. But yeah, I don't think it's impossible. It's at least a conversation that teams need to have.
From Jake on the Twitter, championship game. Now we already did that. Is the Big 12 finally good enough to not be the worst power conference? I say absolutely. Big 12 is better than the Pac-12, Pac-10, 12, 14, 26, however many teams are there now.
I think I would agree.
Top to bottom, I'll take the Big 12 over the Big 10.
I disagree.
Maybe not in the top two spots, but top to bottom, I will. I'll take them over the ACC. Yeah, I'll put them second.
I would put them third.
I'll run out this year. I'll run out Texas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Iowa State. Against the top four of anybody else that's not the SEC.
Okay, well,
I think I'll go at least 2-2.
In the Big Ten, it's probably
we may go 2-2. We might lose with Oklahoma against Ohio State, and we might lose Michigan against Texas. But West Virginia and Iowa State got us. We'll go beat their 3-4.
I don't know. Iowa beat Iowa State earlier this year, so you know,
line up again. Come get some.
No, I mean, I think there's at least it's a debate. I don't think it's a clear cut. I would take Big Ten as the number two conference. Big 12 is number three. And then, ACC has been so bad this year. I think I'd probably go Pac-12. I mean, Clemson is, you know, keeping that conference afloat. But where the Pac-12 is just more average from top to bottom. But the ACC is just down. It's tough to get excited about anyone not named Clemson in that league.
Eric on the Twitter. Shea Patterson. As an NFL draft prospect.
Go back to school, kid.
Okay, because he said if he has a good pre-draft process, how high could he get drafted? Could he go early second round? And my initial thought was, what?
Just watch the Ohio State game. Like, I mean, he's making a lot of mistakes. The ball placement's off. Michigan's defense gave up 60-plus points. So Shea Patterson could have played a perfect game. They probably still wouldn't have won, but they could have made it a lot closer. And with Patterson, he's got a good arm. He's a good athlete, but everything else is just, it's not catching up yet. And he's still more potential than anything. He has shown progression this year. He's better now than when he was in that opener against Notre Dame, but he's still not at the level where you're going to feel overly excited about what he can do at the NFL level. So I don't care what he does during the pre-draft process. I just can't see a team using a top 50 pick on him. I don't care how desperate they are for a quarterback. Go back to school, get better. Another year with Harbaugh can, you know, be good for him. I would be pretty surprised if he came out, but I think that was the plan. You know, is to
change your jersey number,
go to Michigan and come out. But I don't know. He needs to go back to school. But
He's got to change his jersey number. You have to look like a quarterback, young man. You don't look like a quarterback wearing. Was he wearing 20-something?
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't look right.
Speaking of underclassmen.
Drops you around for me.
Speaking of underclassmen, we have had some recent guys declare. And I'll have this tracker up on the Athletic today. We'll track all the underclassmen. But N'Keal Harry from Arizona State declared yesterday. Rashawn
Gary. Top 50?
Gary,
top 60?
Yeah, I think N'Keal Harry's in that 25 to 50 range somewhere. DK Metcalf from Ole Miss declared. He's going to be really interesting. And I saw we had a question about him.
25 to 50?
He could go higher depending on the medicals. Because he missed basically all of 2016 with an injury. Came back last year and was solid. And then this year, missed half the second half of the year with a neck injury. And so I've been told by two sources close to the situation that he will be cleared in mid to late January. So DK Metcalf is someone we will see at the combine, someone that we will see during the process, that medicals, at least, you know, for him being able to work out and be healthy right now, he will be okay for that. Now, maybe the doctors will find something long-term they're worried about, but for right now, he will be cleared for the pre-draft process, and that's great news for DK Metcalf. He still has a chance to be the first wide receiver off the board. He's a freak. He's 6'4", 235 pounds, and he's going to run in the 4.4s. Now,
he's 20.
Yeah, he's a young kid. His dad is former offensive lineman, Terrence Metcalf. You know, his dad's kind of that been grooming DK for the last, you know, since he was in middle school to for this moment. He's a physical freak, and that's going to obviously help him, but there's still plenty of areas where, of his game that he needs to improve, from his routes to, you know, being, you know, using his size at the catch point, using his size after the catch, plenty of opportunities where he can get better, but the upside where he is now, just the physical attributes, that's going to give him a chance to be the first quarter or wide receiver drafted, possibly somewhere in the top 25. It could be between him and Hollywood Brown to see the first wideout drafted.
Is Ole Miss going to get in trouble again? I just know they have. So they have DK Metcalf.
Yep.
They have AJ Brown, another wide receiver. They have DeMarcus Lodge, another good wide receiver.
All three are going to be probably top 100 guys.
And their tight end, I think you said, is awesome.
Dawson Knox, yeah. He's a underutilized guy who's probably a top five tight end.
How did Ole Miss get all this, Dane?
Well, Dawson Knox is a former quarterback walk-on, so that was kind of a happenstance thing. DK Metcalf, his dad was an Ole Miss guy, so like there's a legacy there.
I remember Lodge from high school because he was a Cedar Hill guy, which is local for me.
Right, and I don't think he was like a big time recruit. I mean, he was, you know, a B level recruit, and so that makes a little bit of sense. They also had Greg Little, who might be the first tackle drafted as early as the top 10. He was one of the top tackles coming out of high school.
How'd they go 5-7?
They play Big 12 football.
Oh, okay.
Zero. They have zero NFL guys on defense, and offense is just ridiculous. So, a couple other underclassmen. I mentioned Rashawn Gary. He's going to be really interesting just from a talent versus production standpoint. You know, he never really lived up to the hype at Michigan. The flashes were awesome, no question. He's going to blow up the combine. It's going to be ridiculous what this guy does at 285 pounds. And that's a big reason why I still think he goes top 10. But his career, and a big part of it was injury. But, you know, obviously that matters. That's part of the evaluation. He just never really lived up to the talent during his 3 years at Michigan.
Where will Cliff Kingsbury coach next? College or NFL? And will it be coordinator or head coach?
I don't think he's going to be a head coach right away. I think he's going to have no shortage of offers or interest to be an OC. The interesting thing will be, does an NFL team seriously consider him? You know, like the Cowboys, it almost makes too much sense from a outside perspective. Now, from an inside perspective, I don't think Jason Garrett's going to be on board with something like that. But from the outside looking in...
Well, if you have a bad year, you don't have a lot to say. You say, here's the good news. You get to keep your job. Here's the bad news.
You think Jerry would say that to him?
Running the offense.
I don't know.
Yeah, because what it would come with is, we talked about this yesterday on the show on 105.3 The Fan, flagship of the Cowboys. What you would tell Garrett is there's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is there's someone else coming in to run the offense and you don't get to be in the room. The good news is it also means you get a lifetime contract because nothing can ever be your fault now. You're just here to be the CEO and hang out.
And clap.
And make Jerry be happy that his guy's the head coach.
Yeah, I don't know if Jerry...
Now, that didn't work in Cleveland. That was my counterpoint.
No,
said you bring in a guy to run the offense, and you say, hey, head coach, you're out of this. And then it doesn't go well, and the head coach starts opening the door like, hey, guess what? I can do this. And it's like, hey, no, you're not allowed. It's like, well, I am the head coach. Well, you're not allowed.
Well, Hugh Jackson's a fraud, and Todd Haley, he doesn't play nice with others. So that was a disaster from the start. Now, Garrett and Kingsbury, maybe they would learn to play together because they understand that they have mutual interest in winning football games, and I don't think it helped both of them for the long term. By the way, did you see Baker Mayfield after the Cleveland game? Hugh Jackson went in for the hug.
Yeah, Baker was bro hugging everybody on the other team, but then when it was Hugh, he was like, right, let's stay full extension, this just a handshake and get away from me.
People are kind of getting a little hard on Baker for some of his comments.
It's Baker.
If I'm a Browns fan, I love it.
If he doesn't like someone, he's not going to pretend. He's not going to sugarcoat it. He's going to use anything he can as motivation, and he's going to find a way to put a chip on his shoulder.
And when people call him out for it, he's
going to fire back. He doesn't care.
And as long as he's playing well, I don't hate it because the Browns need something like that. They need fire. They need something to rally around. They don't have that before Baker. So I'm okay with it if I'm a Browns fan. If I'm in that locker room. So, I don't know. People like to get upset over nothing.
UCF, no matter what happens, they're going to get punished for losing their quarterback, right?
Well, if they win.
Because you're not one of the four best teams without McKenzie Milton.
Well, they had
it
no
was It was a hard case anyway.
They had no shot at the playoff, even with McKenzie Milton. No shot. Not a shot.
Which means they have no shot to ever make the playoff.
No.
That would have been two straight years of zero losses, and there's nothing you can do.
The group of five needs to start their own playoff. I don't understand why there's fight about this. I mean, I get, they're trying to wait it out until the playoff expands to eight so they get an automatic bid. But even in that case, you can still have a group of five playoff. It'd still be awesome. And if you do have a team that qualifies for the final four, final eight, then okay, then they're not in the group of five playoff. But the Memphises and the Boise States and the Fresnos and the rest of the group of five, they can still compete for a group of five championship. And there are 130 teams in the FBS. It's ridiculous to think that 130 have a chance to win a national title, when in reality, there's probably a dozen teams. Every year, sometimes there might be, there's five teams at the top, six teams at the top, and then the other six teams might vary from year to year. But those 12 teams have a shot at to win the national title every year, and the other, 118 have zero shot. Mm. So if you're if you're a group of five program, push for a group of five championship. So at least you have a semblance of a hope to win a conference title, make a group of five. And again, if you play the conference or the non-conference schedule where you might win or you might get a spot in the final four, well then okay, you can still get in that final four and then you won't be in the group of five playoff. I don't know why there's fight against this.
Jason on Twitter, probably the last one here. He says, I want to hear you talk about running backs, specifically what juniors might want to declare with no clear-cut running back number one. And who we are not talking about as day two running back options. Where's my guy David Montgomery fall? My Iowa State guy. That's my guy.
He's going to be one of the top five running backs. It's just,
that team has to be awful because offensively, they have to be able to not block. Because I'm looking at his numbers. They only gave it to him less than 200 times for 947 yards, 4.8 a carry, and he's a monster.
He is, but I don't think he's going to test like overly well. Like he's not a great athlete. He's a good athlete.
Yeah, I don't care. He's a running back.
Well, no, but I'm just talking about burst, talking about change of direction, short area quickness, not necessarily the 40, but just some of the other metrics that you care about with the testing for the running back position. Now, I'm not saying I like Dave Montgomery a lot. I think he's a day two pick, but he's, in terms of how NFL teams are going to view him, they're not going to love him.
Who are the receiving running backs? Who's the Kamara guy?
I don't know if there's a true, like, because
that's where the real value is in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's Gurley and Kamara and the guys who are going to catch 70 balls.
And I don't know if there's a guy that is going to catch that many, but you look at a guy like Nick Chubb from last year. You know, he caught five passes as a senior.
They don't throw to running backs at Georgia.
Well, and look what he's doing with the Browns. He already has, you know, double-digit catches, and he had that ridiculous touchdown catch where he caught it behind the defender's back. So just because they don't do it in college doesn't mean they can't. So I think, you know, guys like Devin Singletary from Florida Atlantic, he's a guy that people need to know more about. Junior who's going to declare at the running back position. Josh Jacobs from Alabama, who doesn't get talked about nearly enough one of the top running backs in this class. David Montgomery is definitely in there. Zach Moss from Utah, we'll see what's going on with his knee. Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma, can't forget about him. He's already declared. He's got the medical issues, but if he's healthy, he could end up being a steal. Georgia's Swift is awesome, but he's not draft eligible. Holyfield, the other one, he is draft eligible. If he comes out, he's going to be in that top 6-7 mix. Travion Williams from A&M, he's a lot of fun. I don't think he's a feature back, but I'll add him to my rotation. And I think I've got a quality player there. So this junior class, we're going to see plenty of guys come out, and they're going to add a little bit of. And I don't think we're going to have a first round running back this year, but just like most years, you're going to be able to find good value days two into the fourth round. Even a guy like Daryl Henderson from Memphis, who second in the nation in rushing. Devontae Freeman type of runner. But, you know, he's going to get overlooked because of the size, because of the conference that he plays in. But if you can get him in the late third, early fourth, that's not bad value.
All right, I'm done. You done?
Yeah.
You're not done.
No.
You don't look done.
We had a question about tight ends. We had a lot of questions about tight ends, so I want to touch on those real quick.
Because I work on the Cowboys station. Looking for a tight end. Irv Smith and two Iowa guys. Keep it moving.
I think the two Iowa guys are one and two for me. Noah Fant and T.J. Hawkinson. Now, both are underclassmen. I think Fant's going to declare. T.J. Hawkinson is a redshirt sophomore. He's going to have more of a decision to make.
Get out of there, kid. Get your money.
Irv Smith from Alabama is three for me. Dawson Knox, Ole Miss is four. Then you have Caden Smith from Stanford. Mitchell Wilcox, South Florida. Jay Sternberger, A&M. Albert O from Missouri. All these guys are underclassmen. So those are eight underclassmen right now that if they declare and enter this draft, it's going to make this tight end class go from a weakness in terms of position standpoint to a possible strength. When you look at the senior class, I've got three guys at the top that I like as possible guys in the top 125 picks, top 150 picks. Foster Moreau from LSU, Drew Sample from Washington, and then Josh Oliver from San Jose State. That's a name to keep an eye on. A guy who, not many reasons to watch San Jose State this year. They won one game, but this Josh Oliver kid, he can block. He's a very good route runner. He's an athletic pass catcher. There's a lot to his game that I think translates.
Now I'm done, Dane.
All right, now we're done.
The end. All right, appreciate everybody for trusting the tape. Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button and tell your friends about us. That's the thing. We're looking for growth here, you know? We're looking for a million subscribers and huge big money sponsors. That's what we're looking for. So if you have all the money, shoot one of us a message and give it to us, and we'll talk about it. It'll be great. All right, the end. We'll see you next week on Trust the Tape.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.